for some of the talks tonight. It's going to be very fluid. We don't have any slides or anything. We do have Ken Weir here from Google that's going to talk. He's actually out of the Atlanta facility, is that correct?
Got 6,000 kilos.
And just real quick, he's a Linux hardware engineer, and I think he's going to talk about things like, you know, life at Google, what's it like to work there, things like that. And for those...
Sorry.
For those of you who do not know me, I'm Brian Robertson, president and founder of Olug.
Yeah.
I see a lot of new faces, so hopefully I'll be able to remember none of them. Over here we have Adam Hayter, which is our vice president. Hi. And then where's Pete? Pete's back there. I don't know if we have an official title really for him. He's kind of the coordinator. He's our video,
hardware
audio,
monkey.
Hardware monkey.
Lackey.
John Larson up here in the front, operations director. Downstairs, you probably met Craig. Nice big hat. Craig Wolf, Wolf Computing. He actually works also at Millard School System. So real quick, that's the introductions.
Hello.
So for agenda, we're gonna hand it off to Ken here to talk about life at Google and things like that. We do have some swag from Google. What we're going to try to do, I don't have a lot, and I think some more has been brought in the back here. What I had in mind really was at the end, we're going to kind of come full circle. I think we have about 30 questions of kind of Google information, like stock, things like that. So when we get to that time, we'll ask you to close the Google portal that's in front of you so you can't use it to answer their own questions.
I sure appreciate it.
So
I'll pull the access.
There you go. Or we'll pull the access point. There. So, I think we've got a couple shirts and some pens and some yo-yos, whatnot. So, all right. With that said, I'll turn it over to Ken Weir.
Round of applause, please.
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me? Pete.
Testing.
Is that better?
Am I pulling it down to go up? All right.
Testing. Microphone check.
I'm new to this. That's why I said I'll come up and fix the sound if you want.
Y'all are amazing. Scared to talk now, even more so than I was before. Mary had a little lamb. Ah.
Hello.
Yep.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's improv night at the.
Is that better? Much better, huh? Okay, I am Ken. I am a Google employee. Comes off like an... Thanks, everybody. y'all are much more organized than my Linux user group was. We were lucky if we could find a microphone. So I am a very low-tech presenter. I have no PowerPoint presentation or anything like that. This is my presentation aid. I feel like presentations are cheating, usually, because it directs people's eyes away from you. And I think all the pressure should be on the presenter, so no cheating for me. So I'm here to talk generally kind of about Google, and I think everyone here probably knows why. There's a recent press release that Google is building a $600 million data center in Council Bluffs, which is just across the river. Which way? That way. They are planning to employ approximately 200 people and begin operations in the second half of 2008. So I wanted to come here and talk a little bit about what it's like to work for Google, why you would want to work for Google. That's a pretty easy sell. I think most people have heard about the wondrous perks of working at Google in a number of places. And I don't want to rehash a whole lot of kind of the nice perks that you read about in magazines and all that. So there was the Fortune magazine. Google's the number one place to work in the world. Everybody knows about the free food. It's really good. My fridge at home is completely empty. I eat all my meals at work. You know, on-site gym, massage, dogs, blah, 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 blah. So all that stuff is really cool, but I don't want to spend a lot of time kind of reiterating that because you can go read about it elsewhere in a lot of places. But what I did want to focus on was why working at Google appeals to people like you, Linux user group people. And this is something that's very near and dear to my own heart because I was recruited from a LUG when I came to Google. So it's been said a lot that Google's not a conventional company, and this exists in the corporate literature as well. But how is it an unconventional company from the perspective of a Linux users group or open source community in general? Google invests a gigantic amount of time and effort into open source software and just kind of the fundamentals of being open as a company, providing open services and such. Who's used a Google API, like a Maps API? Okay, a few of you. Yes. So there's greater than 30 APIs for Google services that are released and are available for public use. Maps API is just one example of that. So what this does is it allows you to use Google services programmatically to do things like mashups. I used one of interest today. I forget the name of it. Now I'm on the spot. I can't remember it. But using the Picasa Web API, it could go in and it could grab all the pictures from one of your Picasa Web albums, mash them up, you could add a little song, and it creates a little video and sends it to you, send it to people. So it's kind of a trivial example, but it's an example of how Google likes to make services available for use in other things. APIs that are available are Maps, Calendar, Google Apps, Spreadsheets, YouTube, Blogger, etc. Another cool thing that Google has done that really impacts open source software community, especially, is code.google.com. So they've taken all the open source software that's available and indexed it. So you can search for particular keywords in source and use this to troubleshoot problems. One example is if you're a Linux system administrator and you have a persistent bug of some kind, say you always find a particular error message in your var log messages. So you can go to code.google.com, go in the search box, and you can find, for example, the particular kernel trap that's in the code. And it gives you more insight into what you're troubleshooting. So this is not a new idea. I mean, we've had grep forever, but it's nice that you have a central repository for all open source software in general. Who's heard of Summer of Code? Okay, so Summer of Code in a nutshell, most of you, Summer of Code in a nutshell is Google pays a stipend of $4,500 to a student essentially to write open source software. So students can apply for, they'll come up with a project that will support an open source project, and they will send this to Google, and if they're accepted in the program, they work to contribute to this project, and upon completion, they get this $4,500 stipend. So essentially, Google is paying students to contribute to open source projects. In addition to things like that, Google contributes literally millions of dollars to Apache Software Foundation, Python Software Foundation, Jabber, Samba, etc. So all these things are nice for supporting open source and the community in general, but Google does a lot to contribute actual code that Google engineers have written back into the open source canon. Recent example of this is MySQL tools that were written in Python for DBA work. They got a lot of press and weblogs and such. Has anybody heard of Ginetti? Nobody heard about Ginetti. That one completely went under the radar. So that was announced. Who's heard of Xen, virtualization? Okay, I think there was even a talk at OLOG not too long ago about Xen. I was snooping through your archives. So Ginetti is a Google open source project that takes Xen virtual instances and manages them into basically small clusters, which was something that was developed in-house and was released as an open source project at large. So you can find things like this at code.google.com, which is also a repository for open source projects in general. Google Web Toolkit, who's heard of that one? That one's way more popular. So Google Web Toolkit, has anyone actually used it to do anything? Someday, right? So Google Web Toolkits is a pretty cool thing. It's an open source project where you can write within a framework, you write in Java, and it compiles essentially into JavaScript with all the nice Ajax-y things built into it. So you have a number of Ajax-y widgets that can go to make this kind of nice web front end. Google Web Toolkit guys are based out of Atlanta. I got to meet them the other day. They're really cool guys. There was that phone thing recently. Who heard about that? Yeah, that one's really cool. So the Android announcement was really exciting. So that it personally it was something I was very interested in because a number of years ago I had a T-Mobile Sidekick. Who got one of those? A couple people. I thought it was a really cool phone, and it's based on a like semi-open Java platform. And so I rushed out and I bought one with the full intention of being able to contribute to this phone. And then as soon as I bought it, and almost before I had a chance to take the wrapper off, they closed it off where I couldn't contribute anything to this. So that was frustrating, but I mean, that's not the only instance of that. So phones in general have been very closed. So to have an alliance of open standards and open source in the phone arena is pretty exciting. So these are just some examples of code that was developed in-house at Google that was released into the wild. Google engineers themselves contribute a lot to existing projects in the form of, you know, kernel patches and patches to projects that did not start within Google that existed elsewhere. And they're encouraged, not only allowed, to contribute these patches back into the projects where they came from. MySQL, Subversion, Wine, Firefox are all examples of that. One thing I like to point out is that a lot of my own geek heroes work for Google, and they are also encouraged to contribute on a regular basis back to the projects, either where they came from or to new projects they find after working for Google. Guido Van Rossum is a good example of this. He was the guy that thought of Python, and Guido works for Google now. And not only does he contribute in a large way to Google internal projects, he also has a portion of his time that he gives back to Python. That was part of the arrangement. So he's actively working towards Python 3000. But he's not the only example. So Jeremy Allison of the Samba project is another example of that. Andy Rubin, who's probably less well known than Guido and some of the others, but he was a co-founder of Danger, who made the Sidekick. And he later founded Android, which is the project that really became the phone announcement that was in the news recently. Who knows who Ken Thompson is? Yeah, Unix. Vint Cerf, creator of TCP/IP, he works for Google. All these kind of my own personal geek heroes work there. And one thing that I like to talk about is a job versus a career versus one's life work, right? So on one side of the spectrum, you have a job. Like this is something you do because you have to pay the bills, whether you like it or not. And kind of in the middle, you have, you know, a career. And this is something that, you know, hopefully you like and it pays the bills, but you sort of enjoy it and it's going to get you to retirement. And then you have guys like this that are working at Google who really probably don't have to work, but they're doing it because it's in line with what they want to contribute as their life's work. And I kind of look to these guys for inspiration as far as, you know, moving beyond just a career and kind of finding one's life's work. In addition to all these contributions by engineers in general, there's a lot of papers that have been released, research publications by Google engineers. So if you go to labs.google.com/papers, you'll see dozens and dozens and dozens of research publications on really interesting things. So Google sometimes is cast as sort of a secretive company that doesn't talk a lot about internals. However, if you look at a lot of these papers, there's things that are just really surprising on how much they actually publish at large. So you can read all about GFS, the Google File System. There's a very in-depth paper on that. Bigtable, we have this very large distributed database system, so you can read all about that. Even our cluster architecture, how our data centers are set up. You can read in detail research publications based around those topics. But that's a very small set of examples. So supporting open source and community and such is definitely a great part of Google. But Google also, as a company, does a lot of kind of altruistic endeavors. So we have a campaign where we give away AdWords to nonprofit organizations. So if you don't know, AdWords is the thing where you can pay Google a certain amount of money and tell them certain keywords. And when people type in these search keywords, your ad pops up with a little blurb. So Googlers can sponsor a nonprofit of their choosing to receive a certain section of AdWords time. So to date, they've sponsored the equivalent of $204 million worth of advertising to 3,300 organizations across 11 countries. So in addition to that, there is Google.org, which is sort of the nonprofit arm of Google. And they have given away several million dollars in grants across 25 grant recipients. And most of this is things like new energy research and sponsoring plug-in hybrids, that sort of thing. Solar power research, but it's not just limited to energy either. It's things like studying disease outbreak, clean water, curing malaria, that sort of thing. So trying to convince people that Google is a good company to work for is pretty easy, right? So I'm probably, you know, preaching to the choir that Google's, you know, a great place to work, but why work for hardware operations? So essentially the announcement for building in Council Bluffs is that we are going to be putting an outpost for hardware operations very close to your homes. So what I'd like to point out is Google's not just a great company to work for, but when I look at my own job and where I work within Google, it is my first choice. So Google Hardware Ops is probably the most exciting place within Google from my own perspective to work for. So as a Linux system administrator, which I've been for a long time, I look at clever software infrastructure and networking and clever use of hardware. These are things that are all very near and dear to my heart. So I get to work at what really is the bare metal of Google and what makes Google's magic happen at the low level. And that's really what it is to work within hardware ops. One interesting thing that you'll learn working there in the production infrastructure is Google has a pretty long history of throwing away industry assumptions. So a lot of you work in IT already, and you know that, you know, common knowledge is you want to buy very expensive hardware that has a very long mean time to failure. And one of the first things that Google did that was kind of different from that was they started using very cheap commodity PC components. And that was one of the really interesting things about the origins of Google. So around 1999, they started building their own platforms. And instead of buying, you know, very expensive, high-quality hardware, they decided to write clever software to work around failures. And that really was what contributed to a lot of what the magic of the production infrastructure was and allowed it to scale to the extent that it has. I've heard this analogy apply to a different department of Google, Google Apps, but I like to use it for hardware ops as well. It's like working with really advanced alien technology. and it is. It seems that way a lot. So we break a lot of industry rules, and we kind of come up with our own best way to do it without making assumptions. So it's a really cool place to work within Google. You have the opportunity to work across many different areas of focus with Google's production infrastructure. Before I came to Google, I worked for a very small shop. It was like five geeks, and I was the senior Linux administrator, and I was happy. And I liked it because I got to work with everything. And I never wanted to go to a big company until Google. So what I didn't want to have happen by going to a big company was to be, you know, wedged into a cubicle and wedged into a thin slice of a project where I couldn't see the big picture. So one thing that I really like about hardware ops especially is we tend to work across many different projects. So one day you're troubleshooting Linux, the next day you're working on some kind of, you know, networking problem, or you're writing Python or whatever. So it's definitely cool from that perspective. But you also get to work across many different groups, because when you think about Google as a company, they all rely on you in hardware operations. So if you're an engineer writing code for Gmail, you still have that common denominator of needing a great hardware infrastructure to serve your service. And this is really a common thread across all the groups at Google. So as a side effect of that, you end up doing a lot of work with different groups, talking to different people, working with engineers all over the world. And it's really enlightening. You get a lot of insight into how Google works. So in Council Bluffs, we're looking for several different kinds of positions. I just wanted to talk briefly about them. I want to leave a lot of time for questions, obviously. So primarily, we're looking for data center techs. So that might be a little misleading, because a data center tech at Google might look a lot different from what you'd expect a data center tech to be anywhere else. Looking for people that have, you know, fundamental Linux knowledge, hardware troubleshooting experience, but there's a lot of opportunity, as I just said, to work across many different groups in areas of focus. In addition, we're also looking for system administrators, Linux system administrators. And again, Google's such a different company and the scale's so large that ends up taking on kind of different connotations than what you'd expect. So you need to be, obviously have, you know, great knowledge of Linux, but we also look for familiarity with coding. If you're a Python programmer, there's definitely a place for you. So this is the team I work in, is a group of Linux system administrators. And also, facility technicians are very important. So if you think about the scale of the data centers that we're building, power and availability is very important, and we don't want any downtime there. So we look for very talented facilities technicians. And we need management for all three of those different categories across the board. So even Google has not done away with the evil that is management. But I say that because I just became a manager like 6 months ago. so I can get away with it. But anyway, so that really concludes everything that I had prepared to talk about. Did anyone have any questions?
Just kind of PC off the shelf, servers, one use servers. What kind of hardware does Google use?
So I have to walk this awkward path of answering questions without telling you anything. I don't mean that literally, but you know, it's still, you can still look historically at what Google employs in its production infrastructure, and it's, you know, typically commodity PC components.
And is Python the chosen system administration language? Is there any?
Yes, that I can tell you. So probably 95% of what we do as far as programming for my group is Python.
And it's primarily system administration?
Yes. So, but again, that tends to look a little bit different at Google because of the scale. So there's so many large tasks that we need to administer that our applications become larger than what you'd expect from a group of system administrators.
Right.
But yeah, Python is the language of choice for the most part. You know, we have a smattering of PHP and Perl and such. That said, it's funny because if you look at our job requisition for system administrator, it lists Perl knowledge, of which we do very little. But I think the reason for that is because most people, especially system administrators, have done Perl most of their life. And I found in my own experience, I didn't know any Python before I came to Google, but I knew Perl. So it's easily portable. If you know Perl, you can learn Python fairly quickly.
We've got the mics. If anybody's got questions, we can just walk up and you can ask a question. So raise your hand if you have a question.
Is there any kind of a standard ratio to systems admins to systems? Or is it just kind of configured on a per project basis? You know, some companies will say, well, we've got X number of systems. We need this many people to manage it.
There's not a pre-configured ratio, no. It's one system administrator to lots of machines.
One system admin to lots of machines. Are there any tools that you can talk about that you leverage, like CF Engine or Puppet or anything like that? Or is that another area that stays inside the house?
Well, so yes and no. I mean, we reuse things occasionally. I can say we don't really rely on anything like that to do the bulk of our work. Everything we do is so sort of different. It's like I said, it is working with alien technology, so we have to create our own alien technology to support the alien technology, right? So everything we do is pretty custom. But you know, we leverage open source projects whenever possible to, you know, save from reinventing the wheel. It just so often happens that we have to reinvent the wheel because it's a new wheel that no one's ever needed before.
If you're not a real experienced Linux user, just learning, are there opportunities?
Absolutely.
For employment and then or internships or learning, that kind of thing. That's
besides management.
And then the other question is, I've read in the paper and other things that Google has bought a lot of land or so and so forth. Are they going to expand in other areas possibly in this area?
They bought a lot of land where? In Council Bluffs?
In Council Bluffs.
Well, so all I really know about the Council Bluffs site is the press release. And, you know, it's, I wish I knew more about it, but this is my first time to even this part of the country. I have no idea where I am.
You're right in the middle.
I'm right in the middle. Good deal.
You're a few miles from a first strike nuclear target.
Yeah. Great. Okay, so I don't know about their future plans for the site, other than they're going to, you know, build a huge data center there and employ about 200 people from the press release. But what was the beginning question? Oh, yes. So do you need to be a Linux expert to work there, I guess, is the question. And the answer is no. So there's a lot of opportunities to work as a data center tech, even if you just have some kind of fundamental understanding of Linux. If you are great at PC hardware troubleshooting. And I believe the job requisition for data center tech even says as much, you know, 2 years of hardware troubleshooting, blah, blah, blah. But really, in essence, we're looking for people that have, you know, a decent background but are able to think on their feet and really feel passionately about the technology itself. That's why I'm kind of happy to be here talking to a lug, because I came from a lug. And when I interview people, I always ask them, are you in a lug? Have you contributed to open source projects? You know, how do you feel about the community? And I always ask questions like that. And in my experience, people that go out of their way to come to Linux user groups and to do this sort of stuff in their spare time are the best kind of people to be working on things like this. You know, this is different from the stories you hear about Google hiring. Usually the media attention is on, you know, the engineers and you know, the top graduates from Stanford going to work on Gmail and that sort of thing. So this is really, it's not the same thing. You know, it's a good opportunity for someone who, you know, has some background in this and is smart and think on their feet and wants to work in Google's production infrastructure. Then it's just great from that perspective.
Probably read about Google's interviewing process. Could you kind of maybe go through that again, what it is to, you know, come in for an interview and all that good stuff?
Yeah, maybe talk about your own kind of grueling experience.
Yeah. My experience was really grueling. I could give examples of different interview scenarios that have happened, but... Well, see, the thing is, it's different for everybody. Yeah, and...
Well, I'm assuming there's more than one.
Probably. Okay. But I don't know. But I think the best way to put it is it's not kind of a rote memorization type interview. Yeah, they look for background in the technology, obviously, and they'll ask difficult questions. But really, it's gauging your ability to think on your feet and your willingness to learn those sorts of things. Because chances are you're going to end up doing something for Google that you've never done in a previous job. Just because Google's so different, and for no other reason, the scale is so large. So yeah, we're not going to find anybody who's worked in a similar place. Yeah. So I know that's kind of like a weak sauce answer to your question, but you got it. Yep. You got it. So it's a real, you know, what you'd think would be a common sense sort of process.
Forget it, Jeff. You're not going anywhere. Jeff works for me, by the way.
And I kind of probably have to assume that the positions that we're talking about over in Council Bluffs are a little bit different than like the engineering. You know, everybody's heard the stories about, you know, the 50-page questions and the 10 interviews, and you know, everybody's seen those online, right? Those are probably more geared towards the engineering, more higher level positions inside of Google than they are, say, system administration or data center tech.
Yeah, and those stories are typically blown way out of proportion too. Yeah, so you'll hear the one story about the guy who asked you to, you know, refactor some impossible algorithm in 5 minutes and give a great answer. Yeah, so, and that's not the typical experience at all. But you're right. I mean, so they definitely interview differently for different positions, without a doubt.
So I guess to kind of probably piggyback off that question, is there any plans, and you probably don't know this, and even if you did, you probably couldn't share it, but is there any plans to grow the Council Bluffs facility into some more of an engineering kind of think tank than just a data center, or is it just going to be data center ops?
I mean, that's a good question, and it wouldn't be something that I wouldn't be able to tell you. So if I knew that, I mean, I could say, but I don't think there's any plans to do that as such. You know, typically the engineering offices are separate.
Now, is there any engineering down in Atlanta where you're at? Or?
Yes. But that sort of thing just happens on a case-by-case basis. I mean, it may happen that this facility becomes such a cool location. You know, Google hires engineers where they are, for the most part, whenever possible. They put a lot of emphasis on being a global company, and a local company is the other way they put it. So, I mean, those sort of things just sort of happen spontaneously. You know, if they find a company that does something cool in Omaha, they may acquire them, and there's, you know, ready-made engineering office right there. So that's kind of how Atlanta's engineering team came up. So they acquired a company called Redpill, and that's where the Google Web Toolkit came from. So things like that do happen. And the cool thing is now we're building data centers like Council Bluffs. It's, you know, it's a Google-owned data center. So they have a lot of leverage in what they can and cannot do with that building. Instead of, you know, traditional 10 years ago, you rent some cold, drafty place in a colo, and that's your data center. So things are changing dramatically. In the back. Yeah, you have your choice. So the question, I'm not sure I can restate the question exactly right. So do you have the flexibility to do things like, you know, use Linux, Windows, or Mac on your laptop? And do you have the ability to kind of come and go? Is it fairly lax? That sort of thing. So yes and no. So it's using my own location where I work as an example. It's not very strict. You know, you will be here at this time, and you will leave at this time, and you will have one bathroom break. It's not like that. It's not quite as lax as those cats in Mountain View have it, but you know, they're kind of in the ivory tower, right? So I mean, it's kind of a happy medium. No offense to Mountain View people that are present. I forgot. So to answer your question, I mean, there's a little bit more structure just because of the nature of the work in the data center. And there are things like shift work and realities therein to where, you know, you do have to work on a particular shift, generally speaking. My day is 11 to 7, give or take. And mainly that's so I can coincide with Pacific time, so I can be there for meetings, conference calls, and that sort of thing. But, you know, it's not a very strict guideline. It's not like an office space type, like the movie Office Space sort of community.
What about attire?
This is what I wear to work. I wore my Borg We Want You shirt in honor of my talk here.
So when you started, you said you were a Perl guy and you didn't have much Python. So how did you
how did you pick that up, or how did they bring you along with that? Did they stick you in a corner with an O'Reilly? Did you go to a class? How do they communicate those things?
So my Perl study,
and to maybe expand on that, is what is the formal Google training program with regards to technology for things like that?
Okay, so I started studying Python before my interview. So I picked up the book, just like you said, and I tried to learn everything I could so I didn't sound like a dummy if they asked me Python questions. But to more answer the question, so I got put on a very large Python project, and I did self-study and learned as fast as I could. And the good part of that is you have a lot of very helpful mentors that can help answer questions and teach you things that help get you at speed much faster. So a good example of that is if I have a really good Python question, I can ask Guido van Rossum. But, you know, typically I try not to bug him with every little thing. So I have people that, you know, work within my group that I can ask questions. But for the most part, it was self-study, reading code that was there. It took me a while to get my head around Python coming from Perl. I mean, so people equate them a lot, but they're very different. But if you understand languages, it's not terribly difficult to port your knowledge over to something new. But there's not a formalized training program to do so other than making lots of smart Python people available. And that's probably something I probably should have emphasized more in the notes I had prepared, but probably my favorite thing about working at Google is I'm surrounded by really smart people. So every day I go to work, I learn something new. I feel like I'm the dumbest guy at Google, and I just benefit dramatically from working there. So every day I walk out of that building a little bit smarter than when I walked in the morning. So it's really remarkable to work in that sort of environment, and it's almost like its own training program, really.
Is there a formalized continuing education program? Do you get, you know, if you express the desire to get your master's degree or doctorate while you're there, is that part of that paid for, or how does that work?
Part of it is paid for. I can't remember how much or what the stipulations are, but I know that that is available. Susan, do you know any more about that?
So part of Google's benefits is a college reimbursement program, and they will pay up to $8,000 towards a degree, whether it be master's, PhD, or an undergrad even, as long as it ties in with the job that you're working on. But I was going to say, the other training that goes on is there are weekly, at least, tech talks within different organizations that, if you want to, that are made available either on video or you can webcast into them. And then there is an ongoing engineering education group that develops different training classes that you're always welcome to sign up for. A little harder out in the field because it typically has to be done either online or by video, unless you can manage to get away and spend a certain amount of time in Mountain View or New York, wherever it happens to be answering. But yes, they're all kinds. And we always encourage self-study, like Ken has done as well on certain projects.
I'm glad you brought that up, actually. I should be handing off more of these questions to you. So there's not like a formal training for, this is Python, welcome to Python per se, but there are several documents, Python at Google, Python 101, tech talks that go hand in hand with those things, code labs. This is how we do unit testing at Google, and this is the exercise that you work through to get your hands-on work done. And also, there's a number of really awesome tech talks. Like, anybody know who Kirk McCusick is? FreeBSD guy, guru. Wickedly brilliant guy. He gives a 13-part lecture in 2-hour increments of kernel internals. And he gave the series at Google, and they videotaped it. So one of the things when we start, that's available to us. You can watch the videos and watch Dr. McCusick talk about kernel internals, which is vastly enlightening. Okay.
Move.
So if you're hired here and a position comes open in Mountain View or somewhere else, would you have to move? Answer is no, not unless you want to. But there's a lot of pretty cool opportunity for when positions come available elsewhere that you are able to if that's something that you desire.
Family's here.
Yeah, understandable.
But if you're hired here,
hi.
But if you're hired here, they're not. Google does not have a habit of, okay, you're hired, you're with the company now, you're heading out to New York.
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, we want people here, and they're not going to. So they're putting a pretty large commitment into the facility here, and they are most definitely not going to hire people here and then even encourage them to move elsewhere. So, you know. And,
like I was talking, like, say I went to my data center.
Yeah, now he catches up. Okay, so say I was hired on to the data center here, and then a position I was more interested in came open in like another office, and I applied up to that position and got it, would I have to move?
Well, again, only if you want to. But no, you don't have to. I mean, so the opportunity is there. If you desire a position that only exists in another place, then, you know, conceivably you'd have to if you wanted that position. But for the most part, they're not going to insist that you move elsewhere for any other reason than your own desire. Yeah.
Yeah, my question would be, if a person would have the desire to relocate, is that something Google, as you said earlier, would they frown upon that? Say if a person wanted to locate to, say, another country, say England, for instance.
Happens all the time.
Okay.
Happens all the time. It's actually a cool place to work, even if you just want to, you know, visit other sites, even. Because occasionally there's opportunities to go work just for a short duration in other places. So that opportunity is available.
I always hear about the 20% rule time-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Does that go to hardware ops too? And what's your 20% rule project that you're doing, I guess?
So this question comes up occasionally, and I think that it doesn't apply as is commonly understood to hardware ops. So you do have the opportunity to work on kind of side projects. But for the most part, it's not exactly how you see it cast for Google engineering, you know, typical software engineers. So, but a good example of how it happens in practice is if you show that you're particularly adept at some other thing and there's an opportunity to go work on some other thing, they will, you know, allow you to go work on that part of your time. So in the end, it's sort of the same thing, but there's not, you know, software engineering 20% time, as is commonly kind of talked about in the media.
How often do you have part-time job openings, or are there going to be part-time job openings in this area?
Part-time as in like 20 hours a week part-time? Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know.
Anything like that.
Susan, do you know?
Some Christmas racking help. I don't know.
Seasonal workers. I'm not aware that we will have any part-time positions at this point. I never rule anything out when it comes to Google, but right now I'm not aware of any part-time jobs that we'll be having.
Segueing off that, can you talk about the internship program, if there is one? What is Google's take on interns, college and or otherwise?
It's typically something that applies to the software engineering group, and you don't see it for hardware operations.
Yeah, one of the things we are going to try now that we have our own Google locations is once we get us fully established, we are going to try and work with some of the colleges through our Inge EDU program and work with some of the colleges either to try and set up internships. It's just going to take us a little while to get our crew on the ground so that we actually have people that can work with the students and make it a meaningful internship rather than just having them come in and replace RAM or sit around. But that's something we would like to roll out to our data centers, but we're a little ways from that still.
I saw in the part of the press release or some of the literature that was associated with it, there was a lot of emphasis on developing talent in the local community, not just for the purpose of hiring them to Google. It was to develop IT in the local community of Omaha and Council Bluffs for the sake of it. I suppose that goes along with what you were just talking about.
So, that's one of the things that we're going to work on is to identify either community colleges or universities in each location that we'll be working to do some of that through and hopefully run some of the internship programs as well. But we've got a group that will be focusing on that as we get closer to operational.
What operating systems do you
use? Linux.
So does not Google roll their own Linux or not? I think is the question.
Yeah, I'm not supposed to say, but it's Linux across the board.
Can you tell us what kernel version?
No.
When are your first positions going to be starting?
I know that we're actively trying to hire as soon as possible, and I think it's second half of 2008 that positions will be starting. Susan, can you confirm or deny what I just said?
So first management positions as soon as we can find the right people. And so we're going to be actively hiring. Now that may mean people will go train at one of our other sites and commute back and forth, but as soon as we find certainly with the right management and some of our LSAs, we will hire them as we find them.
I've been interviewing a lot of people already for my group.
Small quantities to begin with, and then larger as we expand.
Yes.
And those management positions are what again?
So we have our team managers who will be managing our techs. There's a manager position for hardware systems, which is Ken's organization. There will actually be site managers who are on the server operation side, and then facility managers for the location here. One other, as project managers.
Yes.
Can you speak to the salaries that may be?
No.
No? Okay. Well, no.
Susan?
That's a good question. How do they compare nationwide? Is it mostly scale? Is it above? Is it below? Is it you shoot for any particular, or is it just per position?
It's obviously going to be. We do market. We do work on a total compensation package, so base bonus equity, and I think we're quite competitive across the board. So.
I got a question. It's probably geared more towards you than it would be for him. How does Google view somebody running their own business on the side that doesn't necessarily deal with what they do for Google?
It's a case-by-case basis. So you mean working for Google full-time and then having your business on the side?
Right. Say somebody works as a data tech for Google. Mm-hmm. So they're a hardware junkie playing in the data center, but on the side they do consulting work for small businesses, helping them do their thing.
Right.
Is that viewed positively or negatively, or do you care?
Well, we do care only in that if we're employing them full-time, we would like their full attention during that time. But it's something that we take on a case-by-case basis. Just look at it, at the time to see is there any conflict of interest. And we obviously want to know about it. But I can't say it's viewed negatively or positively either way. I mean, anybody who has their own business and is successful at it, I think is a positive thing and adds to their value as a Google employee. Our business card is over here on the table if you want to talk there.
Any other questions?
If I talk about something like booksgoogle.com, is that pretty much in one location, or is it scattered around all over?
How do services map to locations?
Yes.
Is that kind of the question?
That'll do.
They're redundant in multiple locations. And a lot of this can be seen just by looking at, public DNS and how it travels.
So really, the data center in Council Bluffs is more is an additional, right? There's no special projects going in Council Bluffs.
I have no knowledge of what you're talking about. Any other questions?
There's an open, the VA hospital set is open source electronic medical record. It's government based. It's a Freedom of Information Act.
Notice that both Microsoft and Google have been acquiring health records from people if they voluntarily submit them. I was just curious, do you have any inkling? Does Google have any plans to make an open source EMR for maybe small doctor's offices? Or?
I don't have any personal knowledge of it, but I know that there was recently a talk by Marissa Mayer, who she is she works for Google. She's in charge of products in general, and she gave a recent talk about Google's health initiatives, and I think it at least partially overlaps with what you're asking about, and that you can find that on Google's YouTube channel, of all places, but it's one of the more recent videos that's there, and that was pretty interesting. I watched.
She's one of the C's, right? Not chief executive, but she's pretty high up, right?
I forget her exact title. Do you remember? Director of products, I can't remember.
I think Marissa may be a vice president now.
Yes.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
You know, Marissa's been there since the beginning. Any other questions?
You said that Google hires engineers where they are. Is that only in places where Google has an engineer office, or do they sometimes start an engineer office with just one or two people where they find them?
So naturally that's again kind of a case by case basis, but I know that, you know, within reason they try and get people to come to existing engineering offices. But if it's you know, some place that's kind of where there's no engineering office nearby and they make an acquisition, especially, I know that's happened before. Where So if you want to work as a Google engineer, could you work from the data center location? I don't really have a good answer for that. I don't know, I guess, this would be the answer.
Depends on how good you are, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I have a son that's going to school at a community college, and they're very Microsoft-centric. And he grew up basically using Linux at home.
Mm-hmm.
And he would prefer using Linux, but he has to use a laptop now with Microsoft stuff on it.
Right.
Since you're in that community, because it's a community college in Council Bluffs, is there a chance that if you do talk to that college that they will start opening up a lot of Linux courses? Or how much leverage would you guys have with that, helping them see the light?
Can Google force schools to teach Linux
not
instead?
Not really force it, but
yes. One would hope. So I think part of that initiative that educational initiatives that Susan spoke to, I think will probably play a role in that. But I think really when companies like Google that use Linux almost exclusively invest heavily in a certain area, that's one heck of a motivator for schools to kind of adjust their curriculum. And that sort of thing doesn't happen overnight, but it is something that does happen. I saw it happen in the town that I came from. It was almost entirely Microsoft-oriented, and then over the course of a year, we had more and more kind of demand for Linux as a technology, and then before you know it, it's half or more than half Linux-oriented classes. So that sort of thing happens naturally. Are there things Google can do to hasten it? Probably. I can't speak to specific examples other than the work they want to do in the community and kind of help training and that sort of thing. But I think in the long run, it works itself out. Did that answer your question?
On this go-round, are you guys talking to the community colleges or is that something that's going to develop down the road? For instance, both Omaha and Millard, I think, have what they call technology magnet schools, and we have community and several other colleges in town.
I don't know which schools they've talked to, but I know that we have started reaching out to some of the schools and starting to think about how we want to interact with the colleges around. I'm not actively involved in that, but I do know that we've reached out to some, but I don't know to what how far along it actually is.
Any other questions?
I realize this is a Linux users group, but do they hire
Microsoft
specific
questions?
No.
I'll just take his mic away if that's
no. Do they hire specific like CCIEs, router guys, or is that rolled into like your job, senior system administrator?
So there is a NetOps department that does networking. So it's conceivable that you could have, you know, little to no Linux experience, but if you were a networking guru, then you could be placed in NetOps. Yeah. So I was a Cisco junkie before I came to Google, just because I thought it was cool and, you know, I really liked working with this stuff. Yeah. To answer your question, yes, there's departments that have different specializations. Hardware ops, is obviously very Linux oriented, but there are other departments within Google.
If you were having a series of problems with hard drives, do you have any particular hard drive brand or model you recommend?
No. Did you read the recent paper by Oars where they talked about hard drive failures and such?
Google hard drive study.
I think that was the paper that was co-written by Urs.
Fujitsu.
He's our director.
I'll send somebody down.
Bye. Next question.
Our age group, what is Google looking for? What age range is Google looking for?
What age group is Google looking for, Susan?
I think 18 and above.
I
think I had a couple of 17 or 18 year olds during summertime.
Yeah.
I think pretty much 18 and above.
Yep. I mean, it's just all across the board. Yeah. Conceivably. I mean, it's not an age thing. Yeah. Looking for people that have a certain set of talents, and that's it.
No lifting requirements or things like that.
We do have a lifting requirement for hardware ops and the
lifting requirement.
Isn't there a lifting requirement to work as a data center tech?
There is some tech assistance probably for the tech themselves. But yeah, I think it's 40 to 50 pounds. Yeah. Yeah.
So there is like a lifting requirement, but I don't know what it is.
Start lifting now.
It's not like you're the bench press, 250 pounds or anything. No, it's not horribly strenuous.
You seem to know a lot about the phone program.
Uh-oh.
I understand they're going to use this company, UT Starcom, HTC. I think that was public knowledge.
Yeah.
But can you tell us any more about that? Or?
About the handset alliance thing. So I don't have a lot of juicy inside details about that. Seth, I know this is really disappointing, but a lot of what I know is in the press release, right? So there's this handset alliance, and it's something like 34 companies, and they've all committed to doing that collaboration. And, it's really just kind of an open partnership to provide an open platform to develop for.
Is it going to be accessible?
Yeah.
I mean,
the point is anybody can write anything for it. So you can write, accessible add-ons for any phone you have, and anybody has full access to do that. So as long as there's talented programmers to contribute to it, then yes.
Tim Dino, does he use Qt control tech?
I don't know. Will it complement OpenMocha? I don't know about that either. I know a lot less than I would like. Any other questions?
How big is the data center here? I mean, I know it's going to change in size over the years.
Mm-hmm.
How big is it going to be in comparison to Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
Oregon, Mountain View?
See, that's one of those things I do know, but I can't talk about. So how big is the data center? How's it compared to the other locations? So that's one of the things that they kind of keep very closely guarded for reasons of competitive advantage. It's going to be $600 million worth of data center.
So real quick, just by show of hands, how many people are actually going to apply for positions at Google?
Oh, good question. That's it?
Please mention that you did see Ken at the OLUG meeting, as well as the name Jane Benedict.
Cool. Any other questions? They're looking to hire approximately 200 people. In the back. Do we have?
He
what?
Wants to know if you have ball. Wants to know if you have ball pits like at Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, like in Chuck E. Cheese. So the question is, do we get fun stuff like the engineers in Mountain View do?
Yeah, ball pits.
Yes. Well, we don't have the Chuck E. Cheese ball pit.
Not yet.
As you so eloquently put it. But we do have a lot of fun stuff. That they do a good job. It's a good question. So they do a really good job of exporting the culture to the other locations. Right. So they don't want to have this sense that all the fun stuff happens in Mountain View and everybody is totally ticked off because all the fun stuff's in Mountain View. So they do put a lot of emphasis on kind of exporting the fun stuff elsewhere. And I mean, you can look online for pictures of offices around the world. I mean, there's an office in Sydney that has, you know, cooler looking stuff than in some cases than they have in Mountain View. You know, and there's stuff all over the place, and they really export the fun everywhere. But I'll ask them about the Chuck E. Cheese thing, and I'll see if we can get that lined up for Council Bluffs. Yes, sir.
Foosball table.
Foosball comes standard with every data center. Now we're getting into the good questions.
Is it college rules or not?
Any particular stock of foosball company we should buy into?
What about the other perks, like they run and do dry cleaning? Is there going to be any of that?
The other perks. So,
do you take your Borg shirt to get dry cleaned?
Yeah. So there's a smattering of perks that exists in different locations, and it's kind of different wherever you go. And a lot of it is just, you know, logistics. Do they have time to set up certain things or certain services available? They do a good job of trying to replicate the party in Mountain View elsewhere, but it doesn't always come across in all the locations the same way. But to answer your question, they try really hard to provide perks for all the locations.
Behind closed doors in the data center, clothing is not their biggest worry.
Clothing is required at Google, though.
No shirt, no shoes, no web service.
No shirt, no shoes, no power button. Is that what you said?
Yeah. No web services.
I have one final question if we're about ready to wrap this up. I think it's probably potentially the most important question you're going to hear tonight.
Uh-oh.
VI or Emacs?
VI.
Hey! Hey!
Duh. All right, thanks everybody for putting one more. Does on-call exist? Yes. But it's not like you're required to do it. I mean, some places it does, some teams it does, some other teams it does not. Okay, so I am a Linux administrator, not a professional speaker, so thanks for putting up with me. And y'all asked really good questions.
Thanks.
before people leave, I need to do a roll call. How many people are on the mailing list? Raise your hand. Okay, put them down. How many people registered on the website?
For what?
Just to see if they're registered.
Oh, just our created a user account on the website.
Yeah,
oh,
okay. As far as I know, okay, all right. How many people here from Google? Raise your hand. So the people who came in late didn't know who they were. Okay.
I got a few things. I'm switching this mic. It's a lot better. Help me out, John. I got a couple of things, handouts in the back.
Good Lord.
Okay. I'm Adam, by the way. Do that again, John. That was cool. No, it wasn't. My ear. I have a couple of handouts in the back. First, I've been working with a marketing professor at Creighton University named John Workman. And one of his projects in his marketing class over the last year has been the OmahaWiki.org site. I'm sure you're all familiar with Wikipedia. It's based on this same model, but it's specific for Omaha and the surrounding area. And they started this, he and his class started this just kind of as a marketing project, but it's really grown quite well over the last 18 months, due in no large part to John's efforts. And my company, the AIM Institute, got involved in it about 6 months ago, and we're actually hosting the site now and contributing to it. And it hasn't really had like a big public release yet, but we're kind of working up to that. But if you check it out, there's over 3,000 articles about different businesses and events and things in the Omaha area. Again, pretty much adopting the same wiki model that Wikipedia uses, even uses MediaWiki, the same software. And we're kind of at a cusp right now. There's a lot of different regional wiki projects that have started up kind of all over the world. And a year seems to be about the cutoff point. They'll make it about a year, and then they just kind of die down. And what they really need is, you know, one or two or a core group of dedicated people who really contribute, and that's mostly been held by Dr. Workman and his class over the last 18 months. But they also need kind of the ancillary support and the tech support and the people dedicated to kind of make sure the site stays relevant and valid. And I thought this would be a good opportunity, since I expected quite a few people to be here tonight, to kind of bring this up to the group here, because we're all the kind of people who are interested in things like that from an information standpoint, and also just from like a site integrity standpoint, to use another term for it. So if you're interested in participating in that project, of course, you know, go to omahawiki.org, create an account, start contributing, do the whole wiki thing. That's great. But if you'd like to take it to the next level and help us out on some of the sysadmin tasks, and it's really, again, kind of the same model as Wikipedia is. We need people to, you know, watch different sections of articles, watch for trolls and vandalism, things like that. It hasn't been that big of a problem, mostly because I think we're pretty small. But we're actually, according to John's statistics, I think we're the fourth largest regional wiki in the world right now, behind a couple cities in Germany and somewhere else. So there is quite a bit of data up there, quite a few users. I don't know where he gets those numbers, but that's what he tells me. So it's kind of a neat thing, and it's a neat thing for Omaha, and it's starting to become a pretty good resource, especially for a lot of the smaller companies in Omaha. And other things, you do a Google search on them, and the Omaha Wiki link is the first one that comes up, because they may not have any other kind of a web presence. So we're starting to get more and more traffic and seeing that. So if that's something you're interested in, again, please register on the site, take a look at it, and also contact me off the list directly if you want to kind of take the next step and be more involved in that. I'd appreciate it. One last final thing. We talked a little bit about training. Ken was. I certainly hope that Google is able to work with some of the community colleges for Linux training. Myself, my company, have been working with them for a long time, kind of trying to go down that path. But in the meantime, you can get training from me. I have flyers at the table back there. I'm teaching a Linux Systems Administration class next week, and I'm teaching a network security class in December. So if anybody's interested, pick up a flyer. Ask me any questions. It's Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, 8 hours a day. Reasonably priced, of course. It's just a big 3-day brain dump from me. So everybody come on down, and we'll do that. So. I'm going to turn it back over to Brian for the next and final portion of the proceedings.
So we got a little bit of swag here from Google. Obviously, we got some stuff in the back here, but I've had a few boxes that have been sitting in my living room that my kids have been pawing at. So I figured, you know, let me go through a couple of questions real quick, and I'll just kind of pass them out, some cool shirts and whatnot. So the first question on the list, and I think I'm just going to – hey, yeah. The first question is how many zeros are in a Google? Google.
How many?
100.
Correct.
Okay.
So the the second question is, in what location did Google originally operate from?
Stanford. I got to check because I don't know. Look at that.
Oh, you know, it's a multiple choice question. So the answers are garage, office, bedroom, attic or basement.
Basement.
It's a garage. Who had garage? No. Who are the two founders of Google? Let me see hands first so I can answer hear you. I think you're from Google, aren't you? Okay, you're excluded. Nobody knows, huh? Okay, I don't either. So it's Larry Page and Sergey Brin. These are from Brangle, by the way. Which company did Google buy in July of 2006? No one?
YouTube.
You got it. YouTube. Can you buy stock in Google? I didn't see any hands yet. So. Yes, look at that, first hand. That's kind of an easy one. That's true or false, that's dumb. How many different colors are in the Google logo? The answer is not five. The answer is four. It is both the G, both the G's letters are blue, the O and E are red, and the other O is yellow, and the L is green. I got one more shirt here, and I don't have any other questions. What is Google stock worth today?
Hands.
Does anybody know the answer to that? Because I don't. It's close? All right. All right, that's all I had. Other than you want to do some yo-yos? I mean, I got a bunch of yo-yos. Why don't we just kind of – we'll throw these in the back. I don't have any other – anything else to kind of present at this time. Where's our liaison of fun for after – Olug, if anybody wants to make an announcement.
No. I've got another question. What was the reason that for one day the Google...
Would you stop that?
I haven't even had dinner. What's your
question? Okay, he's trying to blow my ear out. Okay. Actually, I know this answer. I'm hoping to give him a question he didn't have.
Who's him?
Yo-yo. Mr. Ran out of questions.
Okay.
I'll see if anybody else in the room knows
All
it.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. What day was the Google logo changed to Braille? And why? No, actually, don't worry about what day. Why was it changed to Braille?
We should ask you. What's the answer?
It was Lewis Braille's birthday.
There you go. Get some pens.
Go. Pens.
Would you prefer a yo-yo?
Or would you rather have a yo-yo? Okay. I'd like to thank everyone for coming. I know had to find your way into the building and everything. Tell people what a cool time you had and all the questions. Yes, Dave. Okay, never mind. There is a after lug sig beer coming up at the Old Dundee 50th in Dodge, which is just down the road. So remember, 50th in Dodge. All right.
And I just want to say thank you again to the people at Google for taking their time to come out to Omaha and Council Bluffs. And I'd really like to say thank you for coming to our side of the world. Yeah.